Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Game on 2FM.
Thanks to Jenny Green for some brilliant Tuesday tunes. Enjoy the barbecue. You'd need a warm jacket and a raincoat if you were taking it on in Cork. It's the 21st of April and this is Game On.
Coming up today, 10 years from his US Open win, we catch up with GMAC.
From Northern Ireland, he's a US Open champion at Pebble Beach.
Returning to training, lucky for some, Irish soccer star Dionne Caldwell is back on the pitch with her Bundesliga club.
And on the occasion of her 75th cap, Dionne Caldwell scores her second goal for the Republic of Ireland. And what an important one, and at the perfect time. And
plus, we've Cork sports icon Dr. Con Murphy on GAA without mass gatherings and much, much more.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 and we'd love to hear you. Or you could tweet Game on 2FM. Guys, we just heard Karen Carty in the news saying that it's reported no mass gatherings till September the 1st. 5,000 people or less. Ruby, Marie, what do you make of it?
I think September the 1st could even be optimistic on that one, Donica. I didn't see sport getting back going or any kind of concerts or anything kind of gatherings. 5,000 people, I thought that number would be 500 people, to tell you the truth.
I'm with you on that one, Ruby, but it does, I think, give people a little bit of hope that if they're planning for crowds less than 5,000, then that's a good thing. It's at least paving the way for sports behind closed doors. And I think at this stage, as the days go by, that we would take anything, as in if the GAA or the League of Ireland or horse racing were happy enough and felt safe enough to go ahead and play their games with 5, 10, 15, whatever number of people just watching them, that we'd be happy enough if we could see them on TV.
Well, horse racing's ready to go with nobody. They've already had 10 meetings behind closed doors, so they're ready to go. But I think the big one that announcement is for, the winners would be publicans and people who own restaurants. If they can reopen their doors, very few pubs in Ireland take 5,000 people.
I imagine that there will be specific plans in place for how crowds will be set out, whether it's 500 or 5,000, like how close everyone can get. Now, we have been in touch with the GAA and they're going to look for more information before they release a statement on this news. And the FAI are currently preparing a statement as well. I'm sure they're probably looking for more information as well before they react to that. And just a little bit more news from the FAI today. The Republic of Ireland's Euro 2020 playoff semi-final away to Slovakia, the FAI reckon, will be likely played in October. So, look, it's all a bit of news anyway.
Yeah, absolutely is. And Ruby, we know horse racing's ready to go. It proved that even before the closed down, behind closed doors, they can manage it. Marie, behind closed doors championship, I was reading Davy Fitz today saying he wouldn't like it or want it, but it's better than nothing.
Yeah, I think as more time goes by, people are slowly but surely accepting that we're probably not going to have what we've had before. We're not going to have packed out stadiums, and we've just had to come to terms with the fact that maybe GAA behind closed doors is better than no GAA at all. Now, we know that's difficult for players who will have to go out as amateurs and kind of put on a show for nobody. We had Patrick Horgan on and he said he loves the crowd, he loves the reaction of the people and been able to rise to the occasion, but I think at the same time, if given the opportunity, they probably would play, because like we're in April now, like they've been training probably, like they do train all year round. So I think if they had a chance to look, let's go out and do it, it's a once off, we're probably never going to have to do it again. If we get it right, then it would be worth it.
Of course it would. I mean, the longer you're standing watching, the more people are going to want to play. And look, I know they're county footballers at the very top of their sport, or hurlers even, but they're only going to be like most junior A teams, playing in front of nobody. Most, a lot of other amateurs in this country play in front of nobody and enjoy the game for the sport that it is. And maybe that's what they'll enjoy it for.
And when you think as well, like of the GAA, the League of Ireland, even kind of horse racing, like athletics events, like all the other minority sports that we haven't mentioned yet, they would be okay because it's all local people, it's all people that are here, like we're already in the country. But for the likes of rugby now, Donica, where a lot of their competition is dependent on travel, there it's probably even more worry on them.
Yeah, and I think we saw it yesterday with the Dublin Horse Show, you know, that brings in over 100,000 people to the country, so visitors, like Ruby was saying, it'll have an economical kind of ripple from it. What did you make of that, Ruby? I'd say you were...
The horse show was certainly to go, Donica, because it's much more than just horses and show jumping. It's all the shopping villages. The RDS, the complex, turns into something much different to what Leinster fans are used to going to see. I thought that would definitely go, because it's as big a social occasion as it is a horse show event. But going back to Marie's point, you have Munster and Leinster. The Pro 14 involves teams coming from other countries. That could be a stumbling block.
Yeah, it is. It's probably like it's moments like that that you look at someone like the league in England and France. That's where they probably have the benefit of the doubt. It is brilliant to expand the game and have different teams, but the thoughts of having to travel to South Africa, Italy, Scotland, and Wales, it's just unthinkable at the moment.
Could you see an interprovincial series of some make or shape?
Yeah, I think it'd be good. I think it'd be brilliant as well, Ruby, to put players out with their AIL clubs. You know, if guys need. That kind of games, putting them out with their club, and you know grassroots level would certainly benefit from it.
It would definitely elevate the AIL standing in the country as well, Dunnock. I know that people would be mad for matches and they'd be going back to their clubs.
And proper AIL stuff, proper rivalries, Con, Gary Owen, the big ones.
Do you think we could get the roadcaster out in the road, Dunnock, and go and cover a few of those?
I'd love it. It'd be like Max and Paddy.
We've a tweet in. No, 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 no. No sport behind closed doors. We want to be there.
That's fine until you have none and you have none and you have none. But look, you hear about it and people are going to say you need this, that and the other before you can have it. Look, if we're really going to wait for a vaccine as a society, are we going to have no sport for at least 12 months, maybe 18? I don't know if I could handle that.
Let us know what you think, though. 51552, sport behind closed doors. Is it a runner for you or not?
Go on, Marie. Sorry, I think I was going to cut across you there. But other breaking news yesterday, Dunica. James Cronin obviously received a 1 month ban for a failed drug test. Looks like a mix-up with a pharmacy, but it's a strange one.
Yeah, you nailed it there, Ruby. It is a strange one. A dispensing error, I think they're calling it. So, you know, obviously... As a player, your body's your business and you need to be aware of everything that's going in it. But this was something, you know, with the prescription that was sent into the pharmacy and it seems to have fallen down there. So it's learnings for everyone, Ruby, because you probably have procedures and things in place that you think can catch moments like this. But this is a worry, I think, for anyone that's used to picking up a script. You know, it's just, you know, making sure that the correct name's on it and the proper tablets are being taken by the proper people.
But even the doses, Dunica, was the thing that maybe jumped out at me. Like, I know I've no spleen, so I'm used to taking an antibiotic, amoxicillin actually, and 1/8 of it every day, and maybe I know a little bit more about antibiotics than others, but to think you could be taking so many tablets for an antibiotic, that's the one that jumped out at me is strange.
Yeah, I'll be honest, my medical background isn't as sharp on it as stuff like that, but I do know you're right, Ruby, like when it comes to any tablets, because it's funny, the Worcester lads would give me a bit of a hard time at the moment because I used to always give out about the supplements if they were taken out of the pack. So in Worcester every morning you were given like omega oils, vitamin D, glucosamine, pro aminos, and if they were out of the pack I'd go crazy. Because you want to see that they were batch tested, you want to see the exact numbers, you want to see, you know, and I think when it comes to taking stuff, you have to be very aware. But, you know, this is unfortunate mainly for him because, you know, a guy that trains his nuts off, works really hard, and, you know, for it to happen to him, I can imagine a 1 month suspension is tough enough, whatever about the length of time that he's been stewing on this since the Racing game.
And Tonica, can you take it at face value when you kind of break down all the coincidences and as Ruby said, like the dosage and just the fact that he failed a test? Can you just, like, as a former professional, as somebody who has played for a few other teams and, you know, is obviously keeping an eye on the rugby world as a whole with this problem sometimes raising its head, like, do you just take that now at face value?
Yeah, I would just knowing the culture, knowing the man, I would 100%. I would think I've trained with him. I've been lucky enough to play with James in Munster and lucky enough to talk out with him with the Babas. He's unquestionable in terms of character. He's a hard worker, and I'll be honest with you, I actually feel really bad for Marie. He's a guy that works so hard, and to have gone through all this for something as simple as a dispensing error, it's mad. You watch, you know, old shows like It's a Wonderful Life, and there's little mistakes that can take place. But of course, look, there's always you know, that angle that people would want, and I've no doubt. And like, I'm not saying our sport is clean; it's not, and there needs to be massive improvements. But this is a different. This is a prescription that was dispensed in error.
And just in terms of his reputation and his career, will this be affected now by not just the month, but the damage that goes along with when you fail a doping test?
Yeah, it's a good question, and only time will tell. I'll be honest with you. Look, I think the sentence says it all. You know, that he was given 1 month. He could have got a lifetime ban, Marie, which, you know, whatever about rugby, take that into your life career afterwards. You know, it's an awful thing to carry with you. But I think everyone does know that it was an error, and an error made not by him. But he has taken a month, and I know that he's working hard within the programme to not only educate himself but educate other players for errors like this. I can tell you now, the whole lot of world rugby will put procedures in place so something like this doesn't happen again. And to be fair to him, he's been front and centre looking to get involved in that. But like, I promise you, just from even myself, I'd be worried. You know, when you hear stuff like this, picking up a script.
I agree with you. I mean, that is the worry. I mean, how do any of us know? Well, we hope we're getting the right prescription, and what tablets we're taking are the ones that are prescribed for us. So, yeah, there is obviously a loophole there that has to be looked into for the greater society as well as just rugby players.
It is worry if you're on a certain tablet, or even, you know, how difficult it could be. You know, some people are on, you know, I'm just picking general things, but blood thinners, different type of stuff. If you've got the wrong tablet, it could be detrimental, you know.
Staying with Munster, Donica, any bad memories from this time 19 years ago, losing Heineken Cup semi-final?
You're coming full on for me today. I knew I was in trouble when I saw Ruby in a Connacht fleece. He's well up for it.
So you lost 16-15 to Stade Francais.
Yeah, we lost. Yeah, it's the famous one for John O'Neill's try. But personally, I remember for actually having a howler of a game.
You know, I remember that as well.
So what happened? I played number six, and I'll be honest, I was learning on the pitch. I remember David Wallace was in the back row with me, and 2 days before he went through. It's a small thing at the back, the base of a scrum, but there's certain types of moves like 8-9s, 8-9-15s. Ruby, you'd know him from playing nine. And we got carved open by the most basic 8-9-15 down the short side. And I remember being under the post and chatting to Wally. I was there, now I get it. If the nine runs, I go after him and leave the eight inside for you. And I remember his face kind of going, we're in a European Cup semi-final here and this clown is learning on the run, you know. But I make no bones about it. I wasn't a six, but that game cost me. It really did. It probably stinted me back 18 months in terms of development and pushing on. And I'll be honest, if a young fella made an error like it now, he'd be gone.
How times have changed.
Yeah, thank God. I was poxed.
And you did come back, though. Let's put a positive spin on it. You did all right. Did,
but Marie, the honest truth is, I came back because it was probably one of the only young fellas playing that was 6'6" and, you know what I mean, 15 so on. And that's the truth. Whereas there's a conveyor belt of them now, and an error like that, and it's all over. You know, there's next man up and they're ready to go.
That doesn't kill you, makes you stronger.
There you go.
Okay, lads, let's take a break and we'll be back with GMAC.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game on 2FM. Well, if the 21st of April 19 years ago haunts Donica O'Callaghan, it most certainly doesn't haunt our next guest, who on the 21st of April 2013 won the RBC Heritage Open in Hilton Head. Graham McDowell, how are you?
How are you doing, folks? Yeah, doing really well. Thanks for having me on.
Good, good. That was, what, 7 years ago now, Graeme, since you did beat Webb Simpson in a playoff on the first playoff hole. It was your second win on the PGA Tour, was it?
It was, US Open being the first one, and that was it was a good Irish day, actually, in South Carolina that day. I was, I think I was about four shots behind the leader that day, Charlie Hoffman, and it was about 8 degrees Celsius and blowing about 20 mile an hour, and I felt right at home, shall we say. So, yeah, it was a nice one, a really nice one, and always nice to reflect on the good days, on the wins, and obviously sitting on the sidelines right now, trying to use that type of stuff as motivation to get in the gym and get on the range and get ready to hopefully returning to sport at some point down the line.
That weather that day was a bit like Portrush, Graeme, but the golf course in Hilton Head is nothing like Portrush. It's quite tight, isn't it?
It's a great golf course, Ruby. It's a Pete Dye golf course. So obviously, we lost Pete Dye a few months ago. Hilton Head was definitely one of his iconic golf courses. It's certainly not a course we see a lot of on the PGA Tour. I mean, too many of these courses now are resort courses where, you know, you just bomb it 350 yards and go find it and do it all over again. Whereas Hilton Head, very tree-lined, very tight, very narrow, sort of on like a little ocean inlet. So you do get some linksy style weather, and definitely one of those iconic PGA Tour venues that we all love going back to, and certainly suits my type of game, and nice to win a tour event on that type of a golf course.
You said you started four behind Charlie Hoffman. By the time you got up on the 17th, you were actually one in front. Onto the 18th, you three-putted on the 18th green, and then you're looking at Webb Simpson with a 10-footer to snatch it back off you.
For sure. I mean, I'd sort of played fairly mistake-free golf most of the day in very tough conditions, and the 18th green was probably the most exposed green in the golf course, and I hit two great shots into the back edge to about 40 feet, and then I blew my first putt about 12 feet by as the wind was gusting, and missed the one back. I think I was on the range at the time, sort of just trying to stay loose when Webb was standing over his 10, 12 foot or whatever he had across the wind, and you know, he missed it, and it was playoff time, you know. So it was good memories. And you know, Webb actually hit a putt in the first playoff hole from just off the fringe, which looked like it was going to be a pretty good putt, and caught a gust of wind and shot it on about another 4 or 5 feet. And he would miss the return 8-footer for the half, and, you know, gave me the victory. But it was good memories, good times, great. Just a great part of the world to go play golf.
When you're standing in a playoff in golf, two of you standing on the 18th tee, you know, it's sudden death. Is there any conversation? Is there a dirty stare, or is it the best of luck?
You know, it's a best of the luck. It's a best of luck, and you probably don't really mean it very much, you know. But, you know, after 72 holes, you know, when you get into a playoff scenario, there's a certain element of the pressure's nearly off a little bit. Listen, you want to win, and the difference between winning a tour event and finishing second, you know, aside from the financial implications, it's all the other things that go with it. You know, it's exemptions into major championships. It's two year exemptions on the tour. It's all these other little things that you don't think about at the time, thank God. But you know, there's a certain sort of financial, you know, you're locked in. You're gonna, you know, at least probably pick up second place check as long as it's a 2-man playoff. And there's a certain amount of, you know, as you go into that match play mode, the pressure's off a little bit. And, you know, I've always felt that way in playoffs anyway. And I've been lucky enough to win a few of them. And I quite enjoy that mano-a-mano. You know, golf is a unique game. You know, you don't really play against the man very often, apart from in straight match play. It's you against the golf course. And really, over 72 holes, it's whoever handles the golf course the best. You don't really get to look the man in the eye as much as you do in other sports, and that's probably one of the very unique things about our game.
Graeme, I'm sitting here looking at Ruby, and I'd say he would absolutely love to be involved in playoffs. He's rubbing his hands together, smiling. He'd love it.
Oh, no doubt about it. You know, Ruby's a champion, and as is Donica. And I mean, you know, they're playing, you know, much more, you know, definitely adrenaline filled head to head, kind of look the guy in the eye, stare him down type sports. Golf is a, you know, it's definitely, it's very challenging in its own kind of way, much more mentally challenged. You got a lot of time with your thoughts out there, and you're really, you're not really battling the other guy, you're battling yourself, you know, and that's what makes it such a unique sport. You know, I don't think I could have stood up too many tackles from Donica, and I don't think I probably would have was built to ride a horse either, so I'll stick to what I know.
Absolutely. Graham, it must make it different then. That's why the Ryder Cup is so special. And you look at your, you know, putt on the 17th in the Celtic Manor, just the pressure there, is that totally different when it's the team vibe?
Very much so. And again, you know, I love the team element. I mean, a golf is so individual. It's so yourself, and you know, you're the, you know, when you win, it's all about you, and when you lose, it's all about you, and that makes the game hard. But you know, when it comes to the Ryder Cup and you're playing for each other, I think that's what makes it so special. You know, I've played four Ryder Cups. I've loved every one of them so much. They're definitely the highlights of my career. You know, just emotionally and the pressure that I felt, and just kind of the enjoyment level. You know, be going out there, laying it all out for your team, coming back in, celebrating together, commiserating together, whatever it is you do. It's a special tournament, and you know, just playing as part of a team is something we don't get to do a lot of in golf. And you know, obviously looking towards the Ryder Cup this year at the end of September, it's still on the schedule somehow. Padraig Harrington's a captain. I'd love an opportunity to play for Padraig. To play another Ryder Cup would be very special. It opens up, you know, there's a bit of a debate going on right now whether that Ryder Cup could be played without fans. You know, it would be an incredible prospect to see a Ryder Cup played behind closed doors. I really, you know, my own personal opinion is that, you know, the Ryder Cup, of all the golf tournaments in the world, is probably the only one, that and the President's Cup, that don't work without fans. I mean, it really, they bring so much to the atmosphere, and they are what it's all about. You know, the partisan nature of the fans, you know, the home advantage, it's the noise, the atmosphere. You know, the Ryder Cup to me just doesn't work without that fan interaction.
Funny enough, as a fan watching it, and I think golf is a great sport watched on television, I think it'd be interesting without fans to hear what Padraig Harrington is saying. You'd hear so much of what you're all saying when the guys that aren't playing, what they're contributing. It'd be a total different thing, but I think it'd be interesting.
Listen, I haven't really thought about that element. I mean, and at the end of the day, if the Ryder Cup does go ahead behind closed doors without fans, it's because of the TV spectacle that it is. I mean, listen, obviously, you know, it would be televised around the world to millions and millions of fans, and you know, it would stand alone as a phenomenal golf event. You know, there's something interesting when you walk onto that first tee at a Ryder Cup and you stare across the guy you're playing against or the two guys you're playing against, and the crowd just kind of bring the buzz. And I mean, I've never hit tee shots in my life feeling the way I feel at a Ryder Cup. I mean, just you're so fired up and you're so pumped up. I mean, you don't really, you know, I always think, you know, when it comes to like when I'm warming up for a first tee shot in a stroke play event, I want to be about 6.5 out of 10 warmed up. You know, I never want to be 10 out of 10. I don't want to be like, you know, Donica mode where I want to run through a wall. You know, that's just not like, that's not a good vibe for golf, because you need to be under control of your body. You need to have those fine motor skills and the touch and the feel, and you need to have your heart rate under control to kind of where you can hit the shots. But there's something about that Ryder Cup. You know, you've got that 9.5 out of 10. You're just much more fired up than normal. And, you know, without the fans there, how would that feel? I don't really know. It feels to me as a player, as a competitor, that it would be very different. But perhaps with the Ryder Cup in the line and you're on the team, and, you know, still maybe somehow it would still have the same atmosphere. It would still look great in TV. I agree with you, Ruby.
And Graham, obviously the USPGA have given a date, June, the 11th of June, as a start and back. Having a date, has that given you something to look forward to? Has it kind of put, I don't know, order on your schedules?
Very much so. I think that's exactly what it's done, Ruby, to be honest with you. I think the first couple of weeks, you know, after the Players' Championship got cancelled, I got home here, I was looking around me thinking, is this really happening? I felt the cork came out of the wine bottle sort of a few too many evenings in a row, and I was like, well, you know, what's going on here? I had no motivation to go train, I had no motivation to go practice. I was on holiday, you know, sort of permanent holiday for a little while there. And the last few weeks I've kind of straightened her out a little bit. I've been, you know, training a little bit and practicing, and now that we have a schedule starting to kind of lay out in front of us, you know, 7 weeks until I jump on a plane, hopefully, to go play the first event in Dallas, and starting to put some structure in place, starting to put some sort of training schedules in place to hopefully be in a place to go and play at a high level when the gun goes off, you know. But as we know, there's a lot of things have to happen between now and then. I think the PGA Tour are working on testing protocols, for example, for us to, you know, before we jump on a plane, to be testing negative for COVID, and when we get to the venue, to be testing negative for COVID. There's so many layers of protocol that are going to have to be laid down so that we can start and start safely, which I think is the most important thing, so that we're not putting anybody at risk that's on site, whether it be players, caddies, support staff, television crews. You know, you can imagine, you know, even without fans, just how many people are involved in an 18-hole golf tournament.
We've had a few sports people on over the last few weeks, and many of them are using this opportunity to work on different parts of their game and their sport. Is there anything in particular that you've been working on, or you plan on working on between now and the start date?
Yeah, just a bit of physical stuff, to be honest with you, Marie. You know, I turned 40 last year, and I felt myself, you know, not really being in the kind of shape that I like to be in. And it's very difficult to find kind of big enough gaps in the golf schedule where you can sort of put the clubs down and say, right, you know, I'm just going to completely concentrate on my physical stuff here and try and drop a few pounds and try and, you know, get myself into some better shape. I feel like life on the road, it's very difficult, from a point of view of trying to manage weight and trying to manage fitness. I mean, you're, you know, the long days out there, you normally skip a meal. You find yourself eating in restaurants in the evenings and, you know, maybe eating more than you should. And it's just, I feel like I'm able to get myself in better routines when I'm home, and just eating more consistently and being able to kind of have some training schedules. And I've been on my bike a lot and kind of riding around. The weather in Florida has been very nice. We've been very fortunate to be able to get out and about and get some exercise done. You know, we've been very lucky from a COVID point of view here that, Florida has not really, you know, suffered as much as some of the other states and some of the other parts of the world. So we've been fortunate that we've been able to get outside and exercise and at least enjoy that part of life. But so just trying to get some physical work done. Like I say, I don't think I'm ever gonna be a physical specimen, but we're trying to move in that direction.
Thankfully, in your sport, though, it's skill based. You're in flying form at the moment. Obviously, disappointed that it's kind of come to a halt, or can you get back to the level you were at, Graham?
Yeah, that's a good point, Donegal. I mean, at what point, you know, do you start to get that kind of skill deterioration, if you like? I think, golf. There's always that little bit of sharpness, you know, that little bit of tournament sharpness. I mean, you can only do so much on a range. You can only do so much when you're kind of just playing and practice and simulating. It's very, you know, I think in a lot of sports, you know, a big part of the training is trying to make the sport more difficult, you know, like really raising the intensity, raising the bar to kind of make it feel more difficult than the actual real task itself. And in golf, it's hard to do that. You know, it's hard to create the kind of the pressure. It's hard to make it more difficult, you know, to simulate a tournament setup and the conditions that you might face. So, you know, there's lots of little drills and techniques you can use, but there's nothing quite like being out there with a card in your pocket and really understanding where your game's at, you know. So, you know, thankfully, you know, 20 years into my career, I'm a little bit better at preparing myself for competitive golf than I used to be. You know, my swing's kind of is where it is at this point in my life. I know the little things that I need to work on regards short game and putting and just getting everything in order. I think 2 or 3 weeks in advance of Dallas, I'll be, you know, putting in some pretty serious range time and some, you know, and some playing time here with the boys at Nona. We, you know, lucky enough, we get guys like Ian Poulter and Henrik Stenson and guys like that running around where we can get together and play some games and stuff. But, we'll see. Just excited to have a schedule. I mean, you know, obviously it's very difficult times right now. I mean, I don't think any of us have ever seen anything like it. And it's just, it's been surreal. It's been surreal sometimes. And you realize how insignificant and how irrelevant sport really is in the bigger picture of the world and getting the world back on its feet again. It's been really weird times.
And Graeme, even having the Irish Open postponed must have been a difficult thing to happen and frustrating as well, because it's become such a big part of the Irish calendar. And I'm not sure if you're aware, but just in the last half an hour, the government announced that there's going to be no mass gatherings over 5,000 for the summer. So while it's not great news, in a way it does maybe pave the way for sports behind closed doors.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you say, from the point of view of the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open that I was going to host this year at Mount Juliet, I think our date was the last week in May. I was excited about that opportunity. You know, we had Rory McIlroy as world number one and Shane Lowry as the Open champion, and Patrick Harrington's Ryder Cup captain, and John Rahm coming back to defend. And we had a great field coming together, and I was very, very excited. But, you know, like I say, it's irrelevant in the face of what we're going through right now. And of course, I was disappointed to have to postpone, you know, be part of the postponement of the event. And hopefully we can slot it in somewhere later in the year. So, you know, first, you know, safety first and responsibility first. And like you say, hopefully we can pave the way. I mean, I think, you know, we can start getting sport back safely and, you know, people can start re-engaging and, get sport back on the radar again. I think the European Tour are doing the best they can to try and slot the events in. I mean, the major championships were sort of priority number one. And I think, you know, the PGA Tour with its financial kind of power, they nearly kind of picked up the rest of their schedule. And the European Tour really have to try and squeeze their schedule in around what's already on paper. So hopefully the Irish Open can slot back in somewhere later in the year. If it doesn't, you know, I'll be 110% behind it again, you know, next year in 2021. But, you know, fingers crossed on that one.
Well, that's great to hear. And this is one show itching for sport to get back on. So we can't wait till you tee it up on the 11th of June. Graeme McDowell, thanks a million for taking our call.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Great to chat to Graeme McDowell there. And if you were late to the party and missed it, you can hear it back on our podcast. Good news for you, though, Ruby. You know, if the Irish Open was to go here a year on, you could get ready for the Pro-Am. Gives you ample time.
I'll need all the practice I can get done after the show I made of myself in the Hinch last year. I can't see myself getting invited back on that one, but it was nice to be there once.
Lads, we have a great text in. It's as easy as A, B, C, D. Activity behind closed doors is better than nothing, from Frank in Sutton. He makes a good point.
Yeah. Frank, that is an absolute classic. I'm going to remember that from now on.
And we have another text in as well. I don't play sport myself, but my girlfriend couldn't cope if there was no sport until after August. Well, I'd be in the same camp as your girlfriend now. I would find it very, very hard to cope if there was no sport until after August. But I think there will be.
I was just about to say, Billy could have sent in that text.
Actually, probably. I wouldn't be surprised. So, guys, as you all know, the GA has been... I've been missing it. A lot of people have been missing it. It's such a big part of our lives and our communities. And it's no surprise that people are struggling without it. Our next guest, I have to say, epitomises everything that the organisation stands for. He's been a loyal servant to the people of Cork for decades and for many other people too around the country. But it's his kindness and compassion that make him such a very special person. And I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Con Murphy to the show. Con, how are you?
I'm Grand Marie. I'm cocooned, actually.
Oh, are you? How's that?
I am. Well, I retired from my job at the end of December, and I'm 71 now, and I have a medical condition. And so I'm cocooned there with my wife, Joan, which is interesting, to the least. It's not easy.
Dr. Con, you're one of the most social animals I know. You must be finding it very tough to be cocooned.
Too deadly, Doug. How are you?
I'm great. I enjoy.
I must tell the listeners, sir, when Donica was in Christians, he spent so much time down to my surgery with injuries that some of my patients thought he was a medical student.
The ears, Cod, wasn't it?
That's right, cauliflower ears. He did these lovely years thanks to me.
To be fair to you, Dr. Con, you always were good for helping me miss double biology to go down and get my ears drained. It was a nice one.
and he used to leave everyone going ahead of him.
To be fair, Dr. Conn, it was a who's who of Cork and Irish sport, though. The Kerry lads going in and through the place. It was the place to be seen.
It was good crack.
So, Conn, how is retirement suiting you, or is it suiting you?
It's not. I'm struggling with it, to be honest. I can't leave my house. My kids do the shopping and leave it at the door and stand in the middle of the yard and we talk to each other. And I'm looking for things to do. If I give people advice, I tell them not to watch the news too much because all it does is depress you. And I read books, sports books, and I don't watch anything on television that's depressing or morbid or doesn't put you in good humour.
That's good advice. I think a lot of us could do with following that. And just on sport, because it's all we're talking about anyway, it's all we're talking about in my house. And I say there's lots of houses all around the country who are really struggling without it, Conn. Just something to look forward to, as Ruby always says, the distraction, you know, it's what inspires us so much throughout the year. How are people down your way coping with it? And also, like, even all the athletes that you probably chat to all the time?
It's a huge loss to them. I mean, the Cork players, all inter-county players have been keeping fit themselves. But this evening's news is a bad blow, that nothing over 5,000 by the end of August will happen. So that rules out a lot of matches, I'd say, for the year. So it's difficult for them. But, I mean, I feel more for the people who have lost their jobs and who are worrying about work. That's going to be a huge problem going forward.
We all think the same, Dr. Conn. Obviously, there's bigger things in life than sport, but yeah, looking at it, yeah, you're talking about yourself at home, not able to go anywhere. I believe that sport has a huge role to play here, that it has to entertain people, be it GAA matches, soccer matches, horse racing, rugby matches. How can you see any way medically where we can go about getting it all on and getting people entertained and keeping them from getting low and depressed?
That's a very good point. You're talking about doing it behind closed doors.
Without doubt. Entertain people.
Right. Say, for instance, you put Cork and Kerry down a parky queeve behind closed doors. You're talking about 200 people.
200 people. That's 200 people that has to be tested before they go in to see if they are carrying COVID or whatever it is. Is it feasible? Can it be done with enough willpower and imagination or not?
Well, you see, you and I take the chance, right? But the doctors leading the show won't take any chances. So I don't see it happening, really. It won't happen, I'd imagine. And that's a pity for people because it's a part of people's lives that keeps them going. It distracts them. It takes them out of themselves. I wouldn't say when Cork are going well, I notice people are in better form down here. But I don't think they'll do a closed doors job on it.
It's amazing. I was reading Damien Cahillan in the Sunday Times with Dennis Walsh, and he said he wouldn't have a bother playing behind closed doors, bar the fact that Cork's greatest servant couldn't go. And that's you, Dr. Conn. That's one of the main reasons the players don't want to play, because they know you couldn't be there.
He said that. I couldn't believe it when I read it. I thought it was very funny.
And Conn, just in terms of the team doctor role, so, like, if this does come back, which there is realistically a possibility, will that put more pressure on what you've got to do then, to kind of almost be monitoring and making sure people don't have temperatures and just keeping an eye on everyone?
Well, hugely make life very hard. No, I must point out that the main man in the hurling is my son Cullum, and in the football it's Aidan Keller. I'm there as assistant. Someone asked me recently, I started, it was 1976, my first year with Cork. And I said, no, actually, I was the mascot in 1956. And one of my friends pointed out that I'm back where I started.
Conn,
you might be interested in, and we'll be in, Donald, I'm sure, be interested in this, about injuries. I mean, we see an awful lot of injuries nowadays in rugby, but in all sports, hurling and football. Well, when I started in 76 with the Cork hurling team and football team, in the first 10 years with the hurlers, they won 5 All-Irelands. In the 10 years, we had 1 cartilage operation.
I mean, what do you put it down to?
Thing, isn't it? All the training we're doing, and we're doing 10 times more than we did very little training that time, and it was nearly just as enjoyable. But
it was much more fun for the athletes, less training involved, and obviously then you feel less of a danger to them.
Oh yeah, I mean, the amount of surgery we have nowadays is colossal. We're not far off the rugby
boys. Just on that, it's moved very quickly, Dr. Conn, isn't it? For an amateur sport, it's requiring professional levels of amateur players. What's your take on that? And you've been, you know, at the front line of it. You've seen the developments.
Well, my fear is that we're becoming elitist. You know, that there'll only be a few teams compete for the top prizes, because unless you do the amount of work that the bigger counties do, you've no chance of competing. You know, you see that famous goal in 1982, the Offaly Gas Chambers Derby against Kerry. You won't see moments like that in Croke Park anymore, I think.
I'm just sitting here thinking, and I was listening to you, but I'm going back to something that you said earlier, sticking in my head. You said it required 200 people to open Parky Queeve. I'm thinking 30 players from each side is 60, a referee is 61, 4 umpires is 65, and 2 linesmen is 67. Where's the other 133?
Well, our back, when we'd have more than 30 players. With the backroom team, you'd have about 15, so that's 45. So that's 90. Maybe 200 is stretching it. But
if you break it down, you say COVID-19, we want to play. So there's no backroom team. It's 30 players from each side,
yeah,
a manager and 2 selectors. There's another six people. If you really want to make it happen, if it really wants to, and you want to cut it right down, how tight could you keep it?
Yeah, I see your argument. The problem I think you have, though, is that COVID-19 is new to all of us. It's new to the lads in Dublin who are calling the shots. So I don't see them taking any chances with something that they're not familiar with. That would be how I'd read it with Ruby. Maybe the horse racing would be different, where there would be less contact. I don't know.
That is, but I'm dreaming here, looking for a way to make it happen. I'm looking for light at the end of the tunnel.
Con, Ruby thinks he's going to fix the fixtures, and now he's also going to fix COVID-19, so it'll be grand.
I just think we should be looking for ways to make it happen, not looking for ways to stop it happening.
Well,
I see your point. Yeah.
Before we let you go, Con, I'm just going to read you the tweet from Colm O'Neill earlier, the famous Cork footballer. He said, if anybody can get a vaccine, it's Dr. Con Murphy. And I think what he means by that is that Con has fixed so many of us over the years that he's capable of anything. So thanks so much, Con, and we're thrilled to have you on. And we wish you the best of luck with the retirement and the cocooning.
Thanks very much, Marie. Good night, Will. Good night, Con.
See you, Dr. Con. Thank you.
Game on 2FM.
Well, a special man, Dr. Conn is. Great to hear from him there. He would be perfect company now. If you're heading out for a walk, you could listen back on the podcast, Dr. Conn, the whole way. Well done, Marie. He's a great one to land.
He really is. And guys, there's a little bit of news. The FAI have released a statement. They are going to seek talks with the government and Department of Sport about this ban on mass gatherings of more than 5,000 people until the end of August. But it's actually quite interesting. The association's interim CEO, Gary Owens, has told FAI TV that they need to be able to hold these matches and have mass gatherings in September. Hopefully we can get to the end of August and that 5,000 limit will be increased. And then he said, on the other hand, it gives an opportunity to the League of Ireland clubs. And this is a significant input that they're going to be having, that they're going to put into their debate tomorrow, that they'll be having with the National League Executive Committee, because 5,000 could now be a level on which we could resume the League of Ireland. Sport.
Good sport. The League of Ireland. Brilliant sport.
Donegan, can you see that, can you? Marie is smiling. Can you see it? Come back in the shot there, Marie.
All I need is hope, Ruby. That's all I need. It, like, I know this sounds awful. They mightn't happen, but just like I'm, you know, you're the jockey, I'm the horse. Show me the fence.
I agree, but I can't understand why they can't all play behind closed doors, entertain the people. There's thousands upon thousands of people in this country who just want to watch it. Put it on and we'll watch it with no one there. We want something to look at.
Now, he did add that the devil is in the detail and they need to understand what the government mean by 5,000. And I think that's the nub of it. I think we all need to understand what this statement means. But we do actually have some good news, and we are going to talk to Diane Caldwell now. She is of SC Sand and she's also an Irish international, and she gave us all a lift, I think, when she posted a picture on Twitter of her back training with her football team in Germany, and she's on the line now. Diane, it's great to see that you're back training.
Hi everyone. Yeah, thanks. It was a nice welcome surprise to start yesterday.
So what does that mean? Like, paint the picture for us. What is back training with your team like?
Yeah, okay. So basically, we started small group training. So that's training under very strict conditions. And basically, all of the Bundesliga teams are following those regulations. So there's basically specific hygiene regulations that we have to carefully follow every day. So we still have to kind of keep the social distancing within the training. So 2 meter distance, and we basically have to turn up ready for training. So we're in our gear, we drive to the sports field and we train straight away. And there's no contact with anyone, and we don't have access to the changing room, no touching of equipment and, yeah, et cetera, so, stuff like that.
Diane, can I ask you, players always whinge about training, but surely there's been none in your environment. The whole country is jealousy, not only for physical activity, but just interaction, meeting your teammates, hanging around with your friends.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you really do start to miss everyone after a while, and you don't get the moans and groans anymore of people being like, oh, we're training again today, or early up in the morning. Everyone's just grateful to be back and grateful to see each other. So it's a really nice environment right now.
And Diane, just in terms of people's attitude, because I think that's something that we're wondering about here. When, like, teams here do get back playing and training, I don't know how it's going to be taken by the general public when there's still a risk. But in Germany, how have people reacted to football coming back?
Yeah, well, I don't know if you heard today, but the men's Bundesliga have announced that they could potentially start by May 9th. That has yet to be passed by government, but obviously that's very close to starting. So that would give everyone a lift. Obviously, it would be without a crowd. It would be just broadcast on TV. But as you've said on the show already, like, it would just give everyone a big lift being able to watch some live sport on TV.
There you are, Germany leading the way again. Put it on behind closed doors. Diane, I can't see what the issue is with it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They're very close to getting that passed now. It'll be probably confirmed at the end of April. And ourselves, the Frauen, the Women's Football League, they have another conference on Thursday to decide how we're going to proceed. And as it stands right now, they're looking to start our league by the middle of May. Again, that's nothing confirmed, but the goal is to start by mid-May and then everything, yeah, behind closed doors.
As regards testing, Diane, are you tested a bit more now that you're back training, or have you been tested more?
We haven't had the luxury of that here, but the bigger clubs with more finances, like the likes of Wolfsburg, Bayern Munich, they've all been tested, their players. And to be honest, I think in the legislations for this to be passed, they would probably have to require players to get tested, perhaps even before and after every game. So it's a lot of money.
It is.
A lot of expense for the league.
It is, but surely with TV rights, etc., if leagues want to get them back on, they can direct finances different way and fund it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Bundesliga has more than enough money to cover all of the expenses needed for all those testings. But then, obviously, then the question is, you know, is it ethically correct? Are you taking it away from health services or school systems that perhaps need those tests instead? So I think it will just ultimately come down to if the government has the capability and the finances to cover that, if it's deemed necessary.
And just in terms of the international setup now for the next few months, obviously there isn't any travel, and we don't have we don't know when games are going to be played. But you had such great momentum before this. Is Vera staying in touch? I see her on social media, right, giving a few classes. How involved is she with you?
Is Vera on Zoom? Was the question.
Yeah, she's been in contact with all of us, kind of just checking in, and she gave a lot of the home based players specific programs to follow in case they didn't have anything from their clubs that were non-professionals. So she's always checking in and making sure we're all doing okay. Yeah, like you said, everything's a bit up in the air now and kind of put a stop to our momentum. But look, sure, the way I look at it is there's always going to be a positive some way out of things like this. So hopefully maybe then when the games come around, we have even more time with Vera and maybe we're even in a better position and maybe even more prepared.
Well, I like the sound of that, Diane. That's a great positive attitude. We'll take that. Thanks so much for joining us and best of luck with the return to play. And we look forward to hopefully seeing some football soon anyway.
You're very welcome. Thanks so much for your time.
Cheers, Diane. Good luck.
I've had a few nice texts in, guys. Not about you, Ruby, about Graham. He's one of the nicest guys, very friendly, a lovely person, and looking forward to seeing him whenever he's back on.
My wife just texted me there to say that the GAA should have 4,500 tickets and conduct a draw for the tickets as to who can go.
There'd be murder for tickets, wouldn't there?
Like there's a big draw. It'd be right idea, wouldn't it?
There's normally 80,000 and there's a scramble. Could you imagine for 5,000?
We have some agreement with Ruby. Absolutely. We need to see some sport, even if it is behind closed doors. We would watch anything at this stage.
Can you take a picture of that?
That was from me.
I'm nearly into my second round of Tiger King.
And then we have another one, a guy who doesn't agree with us. He said that we are getting way ahead of ourselves. Until social distancing is gone, there won't be any contact sport in Ireland. It's not going to happen.
Hope.
He could be right, but there's nothing going to happen anyway until there's an abundance of doctors and ambulances. Hopefully that'll come soon.
Yep. Remember, you can listen back to everything on the show on the podcast.
Game on 2FM.